I was out seeing friends. We were having like our Christmas party finally. I always take the bus or TTC. So I was going from Jane to Bathurst. It was negative 29 degrees outside and like windy beyond belief. I think I got on at like 2:15 in the morning. I got on the front of the bus, and every seat on the driver's side of the bus, all the way to the very back row, had someone sleeping. You have people whose heads are like almost at their knees. They're so tired. You have people who like are going to have the worst cricks in their neck because their heads like just like completely flipped backwards. You have people who aren't really asleep because I don't know how you can like get a good night's sleep on a bus. And you probably have people who are terrified that they're gonna fall asleep and wake up without any of their things. And so I took the picture. It was one of those moments where it was just like, no, f this. Like, everyone can look at this tomorrow morning when they wake up.
Thank you for calling the City of Toronto. You have reached Central Intake. Central Intake provides referrals for individuals and families seeking emergency shelter and housing stability services. All of our staff members are currently assisting other callers. Your call has been placed in sequence for the next available staff member.
A photo taken by Alex went viral on social media, depicting a bus full of unhoused people seeking shelter during one of the coldest nights of the year. With tighter budgets, fewer staff, and a rise in the unhoused population, shelters and outreach workers are scrambling to find people a safe space throughout the winter months. As a result, it was reported by the Toronto Star that downtown hospitals are seeing a rise in cold-related injuries. Those who are left outside with no means of warmth are forced to brace a cold winter night and resort to subway stations, air vents, and TTC shuttle buses in hopes of surviving the night.
Aware that its system has been under pressure for a while now, the City of Toronto created what it called the Winter Plan. Now, according to a news release on October 22, 2021, the city said that it would be expanding its shelter space to include 200 more people while adding more space to its supportive housing units. The plan also extends the city's lease on temporary shelters, with 26 currently operating across Toronto.
In the statement, Mayor John Tory said that the new plan would give the city's most vulnerable a safe place to go when needed. But how exactly is this plan being enacted? Are shelters across the city now able to safely support more people? And how exactly does this plan hope to solve the city's long-standing issue with its homeless population?
In this episode of The Unhoused and The Unprepared, with the city's winter plan now in effect, we take a look at how it has impacted different shelters across the system. I'm Talha Hashmani.
And I'm Kathy Gladdy.
You're listening to CJRU 1280 AM. This episode is part 3 of The Unhoused and The Unprepared, a 6-part series where we take a deep dive into the state of Toronto's homelessness and housing crisis. This story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Really awful thing is that like this is a winter happens every year, right? And so it's like it's not ever a surprise to anybody when we get winter, but every year for as long as I can remember, it just always feels like the city is so unprepared, and it often seems to take some kind of really awful death or something before anything changes. So, you know, like this weekend there was an article in the Star where hospital staff were interviewed, Dr. Huang was interviewed, and they talked about how like they're seeing sort of more hypothermia and trench foot, and they talked about somebody dying from hypothermia, right? And it was like, oh, okay, so then this went out publicly And then it was after that when the city said, okay, we're going to add a number of beds. And so every year it feels like we know that winter is coming. We know that there are things that we can try to do to prevent, you know, somebody freezing to death in Toronto, but it often feels like there needs to be this real point of crisis of something horrible happening before there's some kind of like, you know, urgent reaction. And I think that's really disappointing.
Lorraine Lamb, an outreach worker at Sanctuary Toronto, described the situation on the streets following a period of heavy snowfall and extreme cold in Toronto. She said she's seen people try to find warmth anywhere they could, from riding the subway to staying overnight at Union Station.
You know, I think it's important to emphasize that, like, there's only so much we can do when the system is just, like, set up poorly. A lot of the warming centers are not downtown. So, for instance, like, one of the warming spaces is Peter Street, which is, like, right by Much Music. But their capacity is only for 8 people. So that's also, like, far from enough spots for people. So a lot of people honestly just go into a hospital to warm up. I don't have numbers for you there, but there's definitely a lot of people that, like, if I just feel like I've got no options, I give them TTC tokens to ride transit as long as they can until, you know, they can't anymore.
Yeah, and that's another thing too that I saw is that a lot of people are unhoused people are actually taking shelter in like subway stations and buses because there's literally no options for them.
You know, I think that's always been the case even before the pandemic, right? Like, you know, a lot of people usually kind of ride the Yonge line, kind of ride the U, and the subway closes at like 12:45 and they have to try to find another option. I know somebody who, you know, either rides the subway or they stay at Union Station until it closes. And then they would ride the Queen Street car because it's overnight, it's 24 hours. And the Queen Street car was the longest line that there was from end to end. So that's the one that she would feel most comfortable in. But I think recently, you know, there was a photo on that like blew up all over Twitter about like a bus where all these like people were on a bus. You know, I think at one point during the pandemic, a lot of people were using Union Station as an option to also stay warm until they closed. And then we just started seeing a lot of the benches get sort of taped up and taken away. They say it was for social distancing, but for us, like, you know, there are ways to social distance without taking away seating. So it was really became also like an accessibility issue as well.
In their statement, the City of Toronto said that their winter plan incorporates outreach teams to help provide wellness checks and encourage those on the streets to come indoors. 3 additional warming centers opened across the city. One at 129 Peter Street, one by the Better Living Center, and another one at the Scarborough Civic Center. The city said that these warming centers have increased their capacity to accommodate 165 people.
Yeah, so we heard, I don't know, I guess it must have been on the weekend, right? At this point where we were like, we heard that the city was adding all these extra beds. And I know that a city councilor was talking to one of my colleagues about it. And, you know, the councilor wasn't like, didn't know where the beds were. A lot of my colleagues were just also trying to call around with like, you know, the networks and the connections that we have to try to figure out where it was. And like, nobody seemed to know. And yeah. And then sort of after the weekend on Sunday night, I had a call, a friend of mine who works in the shelter. She told me that essentially like they were just given directives to turn the space that, was originally a separate COVID space. They were given instructions to turn it into just sort of like a general space for everybody. They said that there were 49 new beds. And out of those ones, only 15 of them are actually in hotel shelter settings. So the remaining about 35 beds are all in congregate settings. And so, you know, is that, it just feels like we're at this point where, you know, like people don't want to get COVID, but yet the only options that are made available to people are in congregate settings where the risk of catching COVID is so high. So why are we doing this?
When asked to speak to the supervisors and managers at these new warming centers, the city said that they were not able to accommodate an interview. Instead, they provided us with an email statement on February 2nd saying that these centers were open back in January this year. These centers are activated when an extreme cold weather alert is announced.
The email also mentioned that a TTC shuttle bus provides transportation for people seeking shelter between warming centers until 2 a.m. To better understand the impact of the city's winter plan, we spoke to Mike Stohart, a supervisor at Kennedy House Youth Shelter.
We increased our capacity at the onset of COVID. So we have two locations, one at the hotel in Scarborough Delta, and that has 35 to, spaces, when it's at full capacity, 35 to 40. And here we have 15. So we actually have increased our capacity and our size basically since the onset of the pandemic. So in that regard, I've seen us increase our ability to house people. That's about all I can speak to on that. I think it's a really hard time right now in Ontario, and I think you see it when you're out in the streets that people are struggling. And so I think the demand for shelter space and affordable housing has just gone through the roof, and we just don't have enough supply.
Yeah, I think that was an issue a lot of other shelters were also pointing out, that they're sort of at over 90% capacity on an annual basis. So just based off of those numbers, I mean, do you feel like the city is doing enough to provide space?
You would like me to do more, but I mean, I'm not that hopeful or optimistic that they're going to do that. I mean, the city is, they're run pretty tight, right? They're a tight ship, and they don't spend money in, like, that they think is in excess, right? So if they, they're also accountable to the taxpayers, right? And they have other things they have to pay for. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd love for there to be more services and affordable housing units and shelters. But I don't have a lot of confidence, at least in this particular government. I'm sure a lot of people enjoy Toronto and live happily ever after here, but for people who are experiencing homelessness and have gone through so much trauma and pain and hardship, I just don't think the government fully understands, like, what, because they probably can't relate. Like, I'm sure John Tory has, you know, had a pretty comfortable life.
Just to go back to your shelter, how many people have you had to turn away in the recent months?
Well, we take phone calls all the time for beds, and we just say we're full.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking many. In a month, we'll probably have to turn away 30 people. We get calls every day. We just say we're full. I don't know. We have staff here who doesn't seem to bother them at all. But for me, it hurts. Like, you know, I like to think of myself as being pretty compassionate and empathetic, and then, I don't enjoy telling people that we don't have any space, or that when we discharge people, I don't enjoy that either. But I think it's just the realities of the situation, and a lot of our staff are just, you know, burnt out, or they become numb to it, right? They just become numb to it.
Right.
When you see people begging for, like, to come in and get a bed, and you have to say no, and send them to other places that are more miserable, like the adult sector or like warming centers and stuff. It's just, all you can do is throw your hands up and just hope that it gets better.
Kennedy Youth Shelter, like many shelters across the city, have been forced at times to turn youth away from accessing its services. It echoes a crisis with a lack of space available across the city for the unhoused. But within many of these shelters, residents are also at risk of being discharged due to a variety of reasons, many of which Mark says is up to the discretion of shelter staff.
Kind of a three strikes and you're out. If you do something three times that you're not supposed to, it's just, you know, discharge. You know, often we'll try to find them another bed somewhere else, but that's hard to do nowadays. So, yeah, we just, if they're not following the rules and they're repeat offenses, they have repeat offenses, we just discharge them usually. I mean, there is some gray area in all this. Like, we do use our judgment, but yeah, I've seen many people, many of our caseworkers discharged for something as simple as a kid had food in his room.
So could we say that there is a certain policy when it comes to discharging someone? Like, you have to meet this criteria to be discharged?
It's case by case. And every workers make their own decisions. And I, as a supervisor, have a bit more say, but I mean, we, like, our caseworkers can do it if they want to, so. And like I said, it can just be for something simple. Like, if just we have rules and policies, right, that the youth need to follow. And if they don't, then they repeat offenders, then they can get discharged. That's just the way it is.
When we spoke to Lorraine, she echoed the level of discretion that shelter staff have when it comes to discharging a resident from their shelter. She said that while residents are told not to engage in certain behaviors like violence, sexual harassment, or threats, some residents are kicked out onto the streets for arbitrary reasons.
For the people who aren't able to access or who have been discharged from a shelter for any reason, getting back into the system can be difficult. This leaves them to find alternative shelter options.
Here is the story of former resident Lisa LeBlanc, who was discharged from a shelter after complaining about the chef's food to another resident. This audio was obtained through the Shelter Video Project's Facebook page.
They kicked me out for slandering the chef. That was because of my food allergies, because every time I ate something, it gave me trouble breathing and it gave me like upset indigestion, whatever. Excuse me. And I was talking to some of my friends and, you know, we were having a private conversation, but there's no such thing as a private conversation in the dining room because everybody's eavesdropping. So I was talking to my friends and I was telling them that when I eat the food here, it's like I'm eating poison. It really hurts my gut and it causes me a lot of issues. Well, someone from another table heard the word poison and said, oh my God, the chef is poisoning the food. And I went and tried to explain to them what I was talking about, but it got to management and they ended up kicking me out of the shelter with no warning. And they kicked me out. They put me on the street, actually. They didn't, because I asked them, I said, so are you transferring me to a shelter or where am I going? They said, I don't know, but you have to be off the property by 5 p.m. And I had plans to go out that day. I already had my ride booked. I was waiting for Wheel-Trans to come pick me up. So, you know, they said, okay, well, let's make it 6. So when I got back to the shelter, I didn't have my walker at the time, but I was using walking sticks. And I asked them for a chair so I could wait for my ride. And they said, no, as a matter of fact, you have to be off the property or we're going to call the police. Now, at that time, I didn't know, you know, I should have said, go ahead, call them because what you're doing is illegal. But I wasn't thinking that way because of the trauma. So I had to call a cab to bring me to the Tim Hortons, which is like a 1-minute walk. It's right there. But I had bags that I had to bring with me. So I had to call a cab. And then when I had to call Wheel-Trans and rearrange for my ride to pick me up at Tim Hortons. Then I had the cab drop me off at Tim Hortons. And when I got there, Wheel-Trans was there. It was a big mess. And then they asked me, where are you going? And I said, I don't know. I said, I guess I'll go to 129 Peter. I don't know where else to go.
Thanks for spending time with us and listening to episode 3 of The Unhoused and the Unprepared, a 6-part series produced for the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host, Talha Hashmani.
And I'm Katya Galati.